Hello, everyone, and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Survivor New Zealand Thailand. I'm your host, Shannon Gates, here to talk about episode 9 and what I thought was the best episode of the season, just an incredible episode of Survivor, no matter where in the world you are. And to talk about this amazing episode, I had to bring in a fittingly amazing guest. So please join me in welcoming the winner of Australian Survivor Season 2. He is the Cookie Monster himself. Welcome, Jericho Malabonga. Jericho, how you doing?
Hey, how you going?
I'm good. I'm pumped up about this episode.
Oh, man, I'm so stoked that I get to speak about this episode as well. So, yeah, last night got me fired up, actually. Yeah,
it was amazing. Before we get to this episode, because we're going to have so much to talk about, what have you been up to since we last heard from you on RHAP? You did a deep dive about your game with Nick Iadanza, got to talk all about the win, but how's life been going for you since then?
Oh, man, it's been like a bit of a roller coaster on the first couple of months after the show, but it's just died down now, and I think I can actually just chill out, do the things that I wanted to do, and I've gone back to work and everything, and it's been real good.
That's great. And I read that you have an upcoming trip to Disneyland. Is this true, and what can you tell me about this trip?
Yeah, so, I kind of didn't want to really go all out and spending anything with the prize money, because I think, when I'm, who's 26 years old and gets given that kind of, money, and so I just kind of just locked it away from me because I'm my worst enemy. But then I thought to myself, Luke's been a really good mate of mine since the show. And I thought I should help out fulfill the things that he really wanted to do. And one thing he said on the island was that if he ever won, he'd try and, send his missus and his kids to Disneyland. And so I thought I'd just help initiate that. And so I messaged him and I was like, bro, do you want to go to Disneyland with your family? And yeah, and that's about it.
That's amazing. Which Disneyland are you going to?
We're thinking of going to Cali. So so it's going to be pretty good. Doing a 4-day pass, because you can't really do all of that in one day. So yeah.
That is the dream. I mean, I think we all love the Luke and Jericho bromance, one of the better bromances Survivor has ever seen. And when Luke spoke on the island about wanting to go to Disneyland, I think even afterwards, there was a GoFundMe to try and get his family to Disneyland, but then he ended up donating that money to charity. So the fact that you're doing that for him and going with them as well is amazing.
Oh, yeah. Nah, the guy's a good dude. So, yeah, he deserves it.
I love it. I want to be on that trip. I feel like Luke and Jericho at Disneyland is truly the happiest place on earth.
Oh, awesome. Maybe you should just rock up there and we might see you.
Yeah, I was kind of fishing for an invite, but that's fine. I'm gonna show up. Let me know the dates and I'll totally crash that whole trip.
Done.
All right, so let's switch to talking about Survivor New Zealand, this amazing episode. Firstly, what do you think about this season as a whole? Have you been enjoying it so far?
Oh, man, it's been so good. And especially from last year, I didn't really watch last year, but I just watched clips of it on YouTube, and I was like, oh, I'm really hoping that season 2 steps it up. And coming from, from a season 2 cast myself, I was thinking, surely this cast will pick up from what, season 1 kind of probably didn't do, or the things that they could improve on, or I just think that this season in New Zealand has definitely upped their game, and everyone wants to play, and I'm seeing that in every individual, so it's really cool.
Are there any people that you really like in particular, or that you really don't like?
There's people that's grown on me throughout the whole season that I personally was like, oh, yeah, he's not going to do, or she's not going to do really well. And then next thing you know, or next episode, they completely shocked me and surprised me. And that probably has been Lisa, Adam, and Renee. At the beginning, I was just like, nah, I don't see them going to play. And, every episode, they keep surprising me. And and then there's obviously the ones that I'm not still a big fan of. And I think it's because it's how Survivor works is, there's just some people that, the cream of the crop that makes it. And then there's people that have to get taken into the end because, that you could beat them. and there's, you know, say the likes of Sarah.
Yeah.
I thought Eve would have been playing really good, but I think she's just being overshadowed by a lot of big players, and it's a shame. But it's just the way that the cookie crumbles.
Yeah, we already have our first cookie reference. But yeah, I want to talk about this big move in this awesome episode. And I specifically want to talk about Tara, who you mentioned, because last week we kind of prophesized what would happen if Bro Wars 2018 did go down, which it did this week. And I think that I was pretty much correct, not to toot my own horn, on pretty much all of the people. I said that Lisa would go with Matt, that Chani would go with Matt, and that Adam and with him Renee might be more of a swing vote. Renee was more with Brad, but I thought they'd go with Brad eventually, and that Tessa would go with Brad. The one person that I got wrong, who swung the entire thing, was Tara. I said Tara would go with Brad. She went with Matt, but like, how was I supposed to know what Tara would do, because we do not see her on the show? And she swung the whole game. Like, she was a swing vote and she didn't get a confessional.
That's correct. Like, it was fifth vote, wasn't it? And we really wanted to see where Lisa was actually going to take her aside and be like, look, this is what's going to happen, blah, blah, blah. But you just didn't get much edit or much airtime for that. So you kind of wonder where her head's at. And one thing that I get frustrated with Tara is the things she says when it comes to tribal council. It's always, we'll see what happens. And I'm almost like, come on. Like,
yeah,
I want to know what you're thinking. But it's the last, you know, few episodes, everyone's kind of tight-lipped with everything they want to reveal, especially in tribal councils. And people don't want to be vocal because at the end of the day, you don't want to reveal all your cards. And I get that, but it's just, it doesn't resonate on TV. So, yeah.
We didn't even see any conversation with her for her flipping the entire game. She just did vote with Matt. I find that amazing. And I said that if she doesn't get a confessional this week, which she didn't, I'm going to have to put out some sort of missing persons report for her. She's not on the show. I don't know where she is. And I'm actually concerned. At this point, it would be jarring for her to get a confessional. I feel like they just have to just hope we forget about her entirely, because it's so strange. They have 65 minutes an episode of actual content and they still can't give her a confessional. It's incredibly jarring.
And it's already top 8, is it?
That's yeah.
A whole year.
Now she is. It's sad. But okay, so Tara was a swing vote, the most important player of the episode. We saw nothing from her. But let's talk about the move from some other perspectives. And I was so excited to get you on this episode because this move really reminded me of one of the bigger moves in your season that you played an important part of. I don't know if you agree with me, but I saw this very similarly to the Henry blind side. Did you agree with that?
Oh, I can't believe you said what I was thinking. I didn't want to reference, you know, like anything about my season or anything because it's purely them. But I definitely feel like I was watching Henry go home.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I was thinking. And it was really well played by, Matt making sure that this whole bromance thing that he had with Dave really put to use. And he used the resources he had from his tribes as well as the people that were on the outside and bringing them together to get ultimately rid of someone who had an idol that he could have leveraged himself in the future, but he still forced. Was able to be like, all right, let's make a move now because this guy gets further deep in the game, he'll probably take us out one by one. And yeah, that's what I reckon just happened. So it was really cool to see and witness.
Yeah, Brad obviously a huge threat, just like Henry was. They both had idols, so it takes like a very, very big blindside for them to play it. And I also thought it was really interesting that the two top vote getters this week, actually all the votes except that one Renee vote, both had idols and both didn't play them. So I think that's really rare to see. But, you know, Henry and Brad, they both had this coalition come up against them, which was their allies, like you and Sarah and Luke were, and you know, like Matt was here leading like Lisa and Tara. And then they picked up the people on the bottom, like Tessa and Pete, like you guys did, and here was Chani, and they came together to take them out. I thought that, and also it was the best moment of the season, and I agree with that with the Henry vote. So I thought it was really similar.
And that's what I'm like now wondering what's going to happen in the next episode, because I'm just thinking, I actually I have no idea how it's going to go about, because now with Adam taking Tessa to a side right after the tribal council and he's saying, I want to talk to you, you know, privately, blah, 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 let you in with everything. And I wonder who his real loyalty to, because one thing that I found really interesting about Adam's last episode was that no one sees this guy play a social game like no other, like no one's seeing it and everyone's blind to it. And if he just keeps himself under the radar and still be able to make moves the way he's doing, this guy's going to fly through. He's on the good cards with everyone. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. His social game is very, very good. And you can just tell, by the way, that everyone's always laughing at everything that he says. I mean, look, I didn't love that he called Dave a dick now too. He's now said it about Dylan, Aaron, and Dave. I like all those players a lot. Honestly, his Dave impression was pretty spot on. Like, I have to say, it was pretty good.
Yeah, I get the guy, like, digs in everyone's little, you know, mishaps and stuff. And, you know, I was like kind of rooting for Dave to not be the Suki Baba of this episode. And he, you know, he actually had his moment and then he kind of picked up the pieces and he's like, okay, I need to, like, I had my grief, I had my moment. All right, let's get back to the game. And he did that once he got to the, just before tribal council, and he was like, oh, you know, he started eyeing out Brad. He's like, oh, he's saying all of this, but really he's not really with me, you know? So, no, it's actually good to see Dave pick up, and stand up on his two legs and actually start fighting again. And I think, one thing that I really liked about, the tribal councils was that when he didn't play the idol was really, really interesting. It means that he had so much trust and dependency on, Matt. So yeah, that was good.
Yeah, balls of steel for Dave not to play the idol where he knows he's getting at least a few votes. Obviously, if Brad had stood up and played his idol, Dave could have done that. So that gave Matt and Dave a lot of insurance for their plan. But I thought, you know, obviously really, really great for Dave to trust in that relationship when Matt's betrayed him before. And that's been a rocky relationship, even though it is from before the game. But he still had the trust in him now not to play the idol. And now he has it for the future. So it was a good episode for Dave. Adam, I find really interesting because I don't know what side he chose, because he obviously voted for Dave. I think he was obviously keen for Dave to go home. He literally like dropped out of the challenge the second Dave was out. But then he knows about this Brad plan. And even though he votes with the Brad side, he doesn't tell Brad to play his idol. And for me, that means you're choosing the Matt side, but just not getting your hands as dirty as you want to get them. Did you agree with that?
Yeah. 100%. I honestly think that that's what everyone's doing. And even Matt said the same thing where he was like, I'm going to try and make sure that, you know, I want to try to get rid of Matt, but it's still, I still don't want people to think that I never got my hands dirty. You know, he said something in the lines like that. And, I want to make sure that I get to come home and everyone was still thinking of getting rid of Dave, blah, blah, blah. So then I'll still be in the middle, and I'll be perfectly fine. And, you know, I think Adam's making sure that he wants to be on the right side of the vote and get rid of Brad, which is still a plus for him, but still make sure that he's on the good side with Tess and the people that were on the outs, which were Renee and Renee and Tess.
Yeah. And but he does have to be careful with that, because that's a dangerous game to play.
It really is. And, you know, like I saw someone who was very popular and loving to play multiple sides, and that was Sarah. Sarah was a really, really cunning player, and she knew how to play so many sides. But one thing that happens in the merge is you can't do that, because people eventually talk and it starts to dwindle down, and you're playing with the rest of the people that are actually playing the game. You know, there's no more duds, and if there are, there's like a small amount of them, you know. So it's easy to be caught red-handed when you play that game.
Yeah, Adam has to be very, very careful, because now, like Lisa and Matt could go back to Tessa and say that he knew. So him pulling Tessa aside and saying he needs to talk to her immediately is probably the go. But I mean, I don't know. It's like, you either make everyone happy. It's like, well, at least you voted for me. Oh, but at least you didn't tell Brad to use his idol. But then there's another sense of it that is like, you could also make everyone really upset because you didn't save Brad and you also didn't vote with the Matt side. So I guess it's just how everyone takes it. But I do have some faith in Adam's social game that he can pull it off, because people seem to love it. And he seems to just have like besides Dylan, he seems to have just like social leeway with everyone based on the relationships that he's built. And I do think the fact that he was like so central to both plans again speaks to the social game that he's cultivated so far.
Wow. Yeah. That's so, yeah, so true. And I still believe that there are hopes for the people on the bottom, because even though it appears that, you know, these two people on the out, the dynamics between everyone is ridiculous. You've got these little duo relationships going with Adam and Renee. You've got Matt and Dave. And then you still haven't, like, I'm not sure what Tara is doing, because, you know, who's really close to and who she's really listening to when it came to the whole Brad vote. Did Lisa approach her, or did Adam, or, you know, and who did she listen to and was like, okay, I trust you the most to get rid of Brad. So anything can happen. And the last thing I think Tessa said in the future for the next episode was like, oh, something about Tara. And I'm just like, damn, what's going on here now?
Yeah. Well, I also want to talk about this from Matt's perspective, because I think the big difference with the Henry blindside and this one was that the Henry blindside was really a team effort, to the point where there were like endless debates about who should get the most credit for that move. Whereas this time, obviously you should, Jericho. No, but this time it was definitely Matt who was the full architect of this vote. Like, he fully put it together. You know, he had the relationships with Lisa and I guess Tara to pull them over. He had the Chani vote. He had relationships with Adam to the point where Adam didn't go back and tell Brad what was happening on. So it's all about the relationship. And he has that in spades. He had eyes on every vote, knew exactly what was happening. Did you think this was the right move for him, or do you think it was too early?
Oh, man. I think, to answer the first question, I think it's a really cool move that he did. I think it's important that he makes moves around this time, now that there's, what, 8 of them in the merge. And I think this is what I find really interesting when it comes to making moves at the right time, when you should do it. I think it's important to make moves while there's still the majority of people that's in the game, that's going to be in the jury soon. Because if you try to make a move at like top 5, top 4, and you're like, oh, wait till then, half of the people, a majority of the juries are already out. And so people have already kind of made like some sort of idea of your gameplay. And if you make a big move and they're not even there, like, you know, half a majority of them, it's really, really hard to convince them in the finale, because they're like, oh, well, the time that I remember, you were just sitting back doing nothing. And so I think top 9, 8 is a really great time for him to make that kind of move. And now you're thinking, far out, like, who made that? Who made that move? And even Brad was thinking, damn, kudos to the person who did that. And now he's just going to watch in and see how it all unfolds. And all these people that's going to get voted out next will tell the story of that. So, the only thing is that because he did that at top 9, the one thing that I'm afraid of is what might happen next is that you start seeing all the big players see each other as threats. And, you know, Aaron was out. Now it's Matt. Now it's Brad, and you're wondering whether it's Matt next, because even Lisa's out to gun for him. So
yeah.
And then if Lisa makes that move and successfully gets rid of him, then do you think Lisa will be the next one out? So it's almost like it's, you know, people upping each other, and it's just scary because that's what exactly happened in our season, and you're just like, oh. Man, and it's so scary. And you want to make moves, but at the same time, you try to make the move, then you're the next one that's on the list. So
yeah, I totally agree with that. And if you look at it, it's interesting because probably the Alpha Alliance that Josh was trying to put together would have been a good bet for all those guys, because like Aaron took out Josh, Brad took out Aaron, now Matt took out Brad. So it's like, who's gonna be coming for Matt next time? It's just like bigger fish eating each other the whole time, like kind of like Russian dolls. And it totally does remind me of fourth season as well. But the problem is that with Matt, he was kind of screwed either way, where he literally overheard them talking about him. And like, I mean, I don't know if you ever experienced that on the season. That was a really odd scene. So he knows that there's nothing good happening for him if they just stay Kung Kao strong. So he has to shake it up somehow. But now he's a massive threat. And I do worry that they'll come for him, but I do see that he had to make that move when he's literally hearing Brad talk about how Matt's not in his endgame plans.
Actually, I forgot about that scene, and that was the most pivotal point for Matt's game, actually, the fact that he heard those two talking about how they wanted to. Yeah, and I was really surprised that he was, and that they didn't see or hear, because, I mean, those leaves are so loud when you, like, step on them, so I would have thought, like, man, they were turned around and heard. But, no, I think that that was a big pivotal move, and, I mean, to hear that, and I think that Matt now had to actually make that move, and I don't know, I hope that, fingers crossed, it isn't like the Russian dolls and that they all the alphas eat each other, because I really, really want them to battle it out in the top five, top six, and it's such a good group of people at the moment.
Yeah, they're going to end up like each taking each other out, like Lisa might take out Matt, and then they'll all just be left with Tara at the end. That's now my prediction for what will happen.
Like if Tara's listening, like, no offense, but, like, you know, I really genuinely feel that this group of people deserves to have a jury that will respect who should deserve to win. And I think that a good representation of the person who should win should represent this group, because it's a massive group of people who are playing this game, and it's really cool.
Yeah. I mean, Matt still does have some options. He obviously has Dave. He has that Chani vote. I mean, it would be – Lisa seems to be really tight with him. So if she does come for him in the future, that would be a huge move. But he knows that Dave has an idol. I thought it was really smart how he was like, we'll just go for Dave next time. But he knows that Dave has an idol. So he was, like, really playing both sides well. And he's definitely helped by the fact that they have a previous friendship. But the fact that no one knows is amazing. Like, they've kept that about Matt and Dave. They've kept that friendship like a really good secret, I think.
Yeah, and it's like another leverage for them, you know. My question I wanted to ask is, how long do you think until Dave or Matt turn on each other? Because they both should see each other as someone who is, you know, not an enemy, but more so someone that they find as a threat if they wanted to take each other to the final three, because surely that's not going to happen.
Yeah, well, I had a really harsh thought that I don't think they would do, but they could do, is that they could now totally blackmail each other. Like, for them to get on the jury and then tell the rest of the jury, like, oh, we were friends the whole time. Like, if I was Brad, knowing that that had a hand in my demise, that would affect my jury vote. So I don't think that they will do this, but they totally could be like, look, if you put me on that jury, I'm going to stand up at Final Tribal Council and talk about how we had this really unfair friendship. And I think that could affect a jury vote. So I don't know. I don't think they can go to the end together because they're both probably two of the biggest threats in the game. Dave now has a really compelling underdog story. Matt made what I think was the best move in the game, like clearly two huge threats. So they have to cut each other eventually. And I think that they're both good enough players where I don't know who will get the jump first. Matt has obviously more relationships. Dave has an idol. I think they'll work together for a couple of votes before they have to turn on each other, assuming other people don't come for them first.
Yeah. And I don't know. I thought maybe you would have picked it up, but what do you think, say in the case that the three of them, or both of them, both Dave and Matt get into the final two, who's more a likable cast member if the rest of the people were in the jury?
Well, they probably have more relationship with Matt, but they might feel more betrayed by him because of that relationship. But I would say Matt might have the edge because it's like a really big Kung Kao jury. Like, obviously Dave would have Aaron. I love Dave's reaction to Aaron going, by the way. I think he might have been sadder than I was last week because he was like, I would rather have gone than see Aaron going. Like, he has an idol and stuff, and he's just like, this was the worst thing ever. I thought that was hilarious. He's definitely got Aaron's vote, I think. Also amazing that the jury sit next to Matt Chisholm. Like, Aaron's just sitting there, like, staring them dead in the eye. And it's going to be really funny when more people sit on the jury and are they just, like, face-to-face against each other like they're at a dinner table. That was amazing to me. But yeah, I would say, I think if Matt and Dave get to the final three against almost anyone else, they'd probably have a really good shot of winning. So it's kind of like a Wendell and Dom thing where it would be really bad to sit next to each other because they both have a really good case already.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Yeah. It's been interesting. And I'm like, been thinking about that in my head, but I don't know how to come about with it. So, because it's this random duo. And I've seen, because we've seen that with Wendell and Dom recently, and seeing how amazing they pulled off all these moves, and to be able to sit next to each other at the final two was so interesting. And then it went down to the literally like nitty gritty wire.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I'm actually don't know what will happen with this one. So,
yeah. But the best part of Dave, I thought, in this episode was that he was Dave Marley. He wore the ropes on his head. He's the only one in the whole game at final 10, I guess, at the merge, who has short hair. Amazing analogy for how ostracized he felt. So he gets to the challenge. He's wearing the ropes on his head, which was funny. But the best part about this was that he played the entire challenge with the ropes on his head. And he almost won, to his credit. Like, that was amazing.
Yeah, he was leading at some point. And I was thinking, oh, whoa, he's going to break the curse.
Yeah. But even more impressive to do when you're wearing ropes on your head. Like, I get it as a funny joke to walk into the challenge like that, but the dedication to play the entire challenge like that, I was like, all the literally, like, hats off to you, because that was a hilarious moment.
Yeah, and he pointed out that, like, all the guys had long hair, do you know what I mean? Yeah. So I was like, oh, he's the only one.
He couldn't get, you know, in as part of that braiding group. Brad's face when Adam was braiding his hair, like, just, like, contorted in pain, was another really, really funny moment of the episode.
Yeah, that's true. So true.
Another person who was a really big player in this vote, not on the right side of the vote, but a big part of this vote, was Renee, who, I don't know, how do you feel about Renee in general? Because I didn't think that she did very well in this episode. Obviously, she's not on the right side of the vote, and she and Dave won't work together, so now she's boxed into the point where she has to be the decoy vote once Eve wins immunity, because she and Dave won't work together, which is bad on both of them. But for her to just accept being the decoy vote without having any other options to change that plan, I thought was not a good look for her at all.
No, yeah, and so in general, I think I have a massive, massive bias opinion for her to win, and I think only because she was a Chani, and I thought that she's been playing the underdog as well, and then she made one pivotal move where I thought, man, this girl's thinking really strategically, and that was when on one of the episodes, Aaron and Dave were running the show, and then there was a point where both of them were trying to retract back to an original plan, and instead Renee had come up and she said, you know, we need to get rid of, I don't even remember who it was, but they were like, we need to get rid of someone. We do this challenge because for a purpose, let's stick with it. And she just walked off and they were like, okay, let's go back to that plan.
Yeah.
And I really think that she is someone who can influence people when she is on the right, when she is on that side of the vote, and she's got a bit of power. But obviously now that there's just kind of how a bit of dominance power, she's kind of had to sit back, and she knew that last episode she had to just like join that clan. And so this episode was a little bit like tough to watch, because I was like, I've been rooting for her for all this time, and then she had a bit of a shitty episode seeing her not know where the votes go, and like almost just kind of just lying flat and under the shelter with Tessa and just letting things happen.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, come on, like do something.
Yeah.
And she had a lot of airtime when it came to confessions as well. So I was thinking, where is this going to go to? And then in fact, she was just, her names were just thrown out. That was about it.
Yeah.
I was like, damn it.
Yeah.
It's gutted.
She had the wrong idea, because she was willing to just rest on the fact that Dave wouldn't have an idol. And so it was fine for her to be the decoy vote. So if Matt doesn't do something here, Dave plays his idol and Renee goes home. So that's not great. You know, I think some of the things she was doing was good. I think the fact that she's ingratiated herself so well into Kung Kao, to the point where Adam, Tessa and Lisa seem to really not want to split the votes on her. So she's really, really made those good relationships, but it wasn't enough for her to actually not be the split vote. But people like Adam and Lisa seem to really be choosing for Brad to go over her, because they didn't want her to be in that risk of being, you know, the second option to Dave. So she's done well there ingratiating herself, but she's still only bought herself a couple of spots. Like, she's still like the best of the Chinese. I think Tessa even says, like, I know she's Chinese, but she's different, which was like a really interesting line to me. But yeah, I think the fact that she and Dave have completely broken down the communication so that they can't work together meant that she had no other options here other than to be on the bottom of Kung Kao, which like isn't a great place to be. And yeah, that was a problem. She took a lot of the credit in voting out Aaron, which I thought was interesting considering she became the eighth vote last week and they could have even split the votes without her. And then she also says that Dave shouldn't have broken their alliance and that's why she was gunning for him. thought that was really interesting because I was like, when did he break their alliance? Like, they voted for each other every time until they voted with each other every time until last episode where she voted for Aaron. So that was weird.
That was a weird one. And so I'm thinking, where is the parts in the edit that shows this? And, you know, as someone who played Survivor, I'm trying to put in the pieces that wasn't really shown. And I know I've noticed recently that there's not much airtime when it comes to when it's nighttime. It's almost like there's no night strategic talk. Yeah. And I wonder how much of that is missed, because I know for a fact people talk at night, and people do whisper when people are sleeping. And I wonder whether there was moments where Renee had talked to the Chani, and she probably just told them, like, look, this is where it's at and la la la. And then went up to Kung Kao and was like, I'm loyal to you guys, blah, blah, blah. And that's where she's kind of gotten that brownie points when it came to, you know, being that eighth Kung Kao, and how Tessa has come to love her. And even there was even a point where Lisa was like, yeah, she was really important in our vote when we got rid of Aaron. And I was just like, oh, what's going on here? Like, I want to know what's happening. And the fact that she said that last week was like, you broke them. I was like, wait a minute, you did. You said you're not loyal to the Chani anymore. But what I am afraid about is that if she does get to a finale, I wonder what the Chani leftovers that's in the jury would look at her as, if she's going to be someone that they might go, oh, you screwed our chances of getting to the end.
Yes.
And so I'm wondering, and if she has enough likability factor from the Kung Kao for her to get the votes from them versus an original Kung Kao.
Yeah, it's kind of like a similar thing that Laurel was in on Ghost Island, because she kind of screwed over the Malolos and jumped ship a bit to being with Wendell and Dom, who were Navidi, and then the Malolos didn't like that. So, I mean, Aaron wouldn't vote for her, I don't think. At this point, she and Dave seem to have some of the biggest beef in the game, so he wouldn't vote for her. So she's kind of lost that Chani thing, and I don't know if she'd have enough of the votes at the end to win unless she, like, played a really, really strong strategic game from here, and she's not in a great spot, so it would have to be pretty strong.
I'm kind of gutted because she's gone out in the way where now all the, you know, especially Dave saying he wants vengeance, you know, because of Renee voting the other side. And I just think that she's made all these new relationships with the Kung Kao, but she hasn't really kept the relationships with Chani. It's almost like she's just kind of just you know, just throw them to the side, and she just started to hang out in the shelter with Tessa. And I'm just thinking, oh, come on. You gotta understand that these people are gonna be in the jury at some point as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm a bit gutted for that. Yeah. But I still actually have hopes for Renee, and I think there's still a lot of ammo that she's got. And I know that she has this relationship with Adam, which I think is brewing at some point. I really hope that Adam and Renee change it up and they bring Tessa on board with it.
Yeah.
Whether to get rid of a big player, it'd be nice to just watch, you know, the power shifting to another person once again. And I think with how it's going, the dynamics, I think it's easily going to happen. Whether Lisa taking it from Matt or Adam or Renee. And I wonder if Eve again will change it up as well, because I feel like she's getting slowly discredited in the edits, and she's almost becoming like Tara, where she's just there and just almost filling in the numbers now.
Yeah, we haven't seen a lot of Eve, but she was good in that challenge. She was like a queen in that challenge. She stayed up there for almost 2.5 hours, and that was crucial, because if she doesn't win in that challenge, now they can split the vote on Dave and Eve instead of having to bring Renee in. And I think that a lot of those Kung Kao people would have been happy with that, and they might not have gone for Brad if that happened. It might not have forced Matt to make that move, because Dave became like the sole target to a degree. And yeah, I think that the Adam and Renee relationship is so important, because I think he was really protecting her here. And maybe one of the reasons he didn't tell Brad to play his idol is because it might have come back on Renee, which it would have. He would have played it. Dave would have played it. Renee would have gone home. So maybe this was fan fiction, but I do kind of feel like he thought, okay, well, at least Renee will be okay. And he almost chose Renee. He certainly didn't choose Dave over Brad. I don't even know if he chose Matt over Brad, but he definitely chose Renee over Brad. So I think that's a pivotal relationship. And of course, it was spurred on by the fact that Eve was immune. So she did well there, even though I don't even think she got a confessional, even though she won this really crucial immunity challenge.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that did. I was rooting for Eve for her to win just because I wanted to see how that would turn out. And it would have made Matt's decision so much more easier to really look into getting rid of Brad, and he did that. So I was like, yeah, all right, that's good. It worked out right for him. I wonder, had it been somebody else that won it, what would have happened? Like, say Brad to win it, what would have happened? And would Matt have been that loyal to Dave to save him?
Yeah.
Even though he's got a little, but he could have easily use that knowledge and be like, okay, don't worry, everyone's going to gun for you. Blah, 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 and then, or something like that, or saying, oh, we're splitting the votes, don't use your idol. We're going to all get rid of, say, you know, Lisa or something.
Yeah, I think in Matt's original plan, I think what he wanted was to get out of Brad or someone on that side by having Dave play the idol and not necessarily have to vote that way and get his hands super dirty. But then the plan kind of evolved where he was like, just went all in and literally put the majority of the votes on Brad and then save that idol for Dave. So I think that it kind of like evolved throughout where he was like, oh, you know, like in with a penny, in for a pound. So yeah, I think that's how it went for him. But I do want to talk about Brad, who wins the reward challenge. Yeah. And then I thought he had some unconventional picks for who he chose, but I actually quite liked it. What did you think of him choosing Dave, Matt, and Tessa as his three picks for the reward?
That's probably one of my favorite groups that anyone picks for a reward challenge, and the order that he picked as well. And I think that's how you should pick. He decided to safely choose the person that everyone thinks should go home. And so it kind of gives off that, all right, he's got no favoritisms. And then I started going, oh, is he going to pick Tessa? Is that going to show a little bit of, inclined to choosing the person he wants to take to the end? And he did. But I think because he picked Dave first, definitely made people not as suspicious of Brad with, you know, taking Tessa as well.
Yeah.
And then he took Matt, and you know, like he said, oh, like he's also a big eater, and they're like, yeah, fine. So I really like the way he chose in the order that he chose. So it was really good.
Yeah, it was very strange because at first I didn't really like the Dave pick because you're like, well, he's just on the out. But then the more you think about it, you're like, well, he thinks he's going home soon, so that's a potential jury vote he might be securing. He doesn't leave Dave to like run around and, you know, try and conspire against him when he's not there. I mean, there was the threat that maybe there'd be an idol in the tuna, an idol clue or something, but, you know, maybe he can at least monitor that. And the fact that he brings like his biggest rival in Matt, his biggest target in Dave, and then the best friend Tessa, who I feel like probably would have been annoyed if she wasn't picked. I feel like he covered all of his bases, and Adam did have a bit to say about it, as he would, but no one seemed that mad about it. So I was like, actually really good picks. And even though he does go home in the episode, I can't really attribute it to that because I thought that he did really well with those picks.
Oh, I reckon so too. He did a great job with it. And but one thing that, like, if I was a Brad, and if I, even though I had no inkling feeling that Matt was out to get me, I would have still tried to put a bit more effort in making Dave feel like there was a bit of hope for him. Mm-hmm. Dave had this massive speech that went for hours, apparently.
Yeah.
On trying to work with him. And they just weren't that interested. Well, I mean, the edit showed they were just like yawning and stuff. But
yeah, if I literally was falling asleep.
Do you know what I mean? And I think that I would have tried to make sure that that there was some sort of like a bit of hope for Dave, so then that Dave wouldn't hustle as much, and he would have felt like there was this false group going on, and he would have just been blinded to that instead of trying to hustle else. So yeah.
Yeah, I think that speaks a lot to the mistakes that Brad did make in the game. I have made a bit of a list here, which is a bit, I guess, a bit mean to Brad. Sorry about that. But if I look at why he got voted out, you know, obviously he was overconfident. He didn't play the idol, so that's not a good thing. He made his alliances, as you said, way too obvious, where it was just like, Kang Hao strong. And obviously it's unfortunate that Matt literally overheard him talking about those alliances, but just in general, I think that he was very much like clear cut about his alliances, which I didn't think was very good. I don't think he's a player who really thinks outside of the box. As you said, if he could come to Dave and be like, here's the fake plan or whatever, then Dave might not be hustling so much against him. So he's kind of just like, Kang Hao strong, down the line, really confident in that without thinking like, okay, and how do I cover my bases in every other way? I also think he was really overzealous in splitting the votes on Renee. His alliance clearly didn't want to do that. And Matt made Brad out to be a bit of a dictator as well. So I think he just kind of played into that. So that wasn't good. And also, he gave Dave a lot of info to play with. He said, there's going to be two votes on Renee. You guys have two votes. He, like, was trying to, like, be nice to him, maybe again as a potential jury vote, and give him information without actually helping him. So Dave had no incentive to actually work with him, but he also now had all this information, and it kind of reminded me about how Brad played the Liam vote, where Liam went home, and they knew that they weren't voting for JT. So he tends to give his opponents a lot of information without, like, creating goodwill that they would want to work with him. So I think those were his mistakes.
No, that's really good. And that's it's really interesting that you brought back the Liam vote, because that literally could have gone the wrong way. And and JT just, he knew that it was happening, and it was just unfortunate that Eve gave the idol to the wrong person. Do you know what I mean? And yeah. That was 50-50. That could have changed. But yeah, so no, it's, yeah, completely agree with you with that one, actually. Good job.
Yeah, I felt kind of bad just being like, what did Brad do wrong, and just writing down all these list of mistakes. But I just think that he's just a very like binary player where it's like black and white, and he doesn't have that extra dimension to be like, okay, where is like the third option, or at least a fake option. You know, it was just so clear cut. And like, he's obviously such a huge threat. He has an idol, so if you're going to go for that side, you're not going to take out like a Tessa, who has those relationships with him as well, which with someone like an Adam, which might make it harder. But also, you know, he has an idol, so you can't take out his allies and give him the heads up so he uses the idol next time. So you just have to take the clear shot at him. I think that, you know, that was the problem with him. But it was interesting to see him try to appeal to Dave and give him that extra information without actually helping him out. I think he was just trying to have it, you know, have his cake and eat it too, but without knowing how to actually do that in the proper way.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's such a shame, because the guy, I reckon, was a really good player. And I think that there was just that bit of blind spot that he didn't see coming. And again, you were right, like in the sense that he has a bit of not a 2D dimension of the game, but more so like where he becomes overconfident can be something that you might be blinded to and realize that you're giving so much information away. And that's just enough for someone to use against them. And it happened for him at the right time, the right moment. And yeah, the guy got booted out.
Yeah, for sure. So I also want to get to the most important part of this whole episode. No, it wasn't the most epic blindside of the season. It was the reward, which I was laughing so hard about. John West salmon and tuna. This amazing product placement. Personally, I'm a vegetarian, but even before I was a vegetarian, tuna's like my least favorite food. And even when friends would bring it to school, just the smell of it, like I was feeling like, not to, you know, get at the sponsors here, but I was literally feeling so nauseous watching them eat it. Then I had friends texting me being like, I really feel like tuna right now. So maybe I'm just on the wrong side of this. But did that reward look good to you at all? I thought it looked terrible.
It's, you know, that's what's so funny, because I actually love tuna, but I know a lot of people who don't. So I'm just thinking that it's so suck if there's a lot of people that were there on that reward challenge and they hate tuna. Luckily, you picked the right people, because they were like, oh, I love tuna. But I was looking at Tara's face, and the way she was just looking at it, I was like, I don't know if she likes them.
It's such a polarizing food to have as a reward. It's like being like, the reward is olives. Like, everyone knows you either hate or you love olives. So if it was me personally, I'd be like, just don't pick me. Like, don't. And Tessa was like, it's really a different reward. It's fish. It's like, all you have to eat out there is fish. But there was, who needs so many cans of tuna? There were so many cans. It was just absurd.
The sponsor to, you know, the, because, you know, obviously there's always a sponsored product, and I think that was the equivalent to our KFC challenge, you know, and they had the John West challenge.
Yeah, honestly, like, I know they rely on sponsors, and every single sponsor in New Zealand should be wanting to get on the show just to have Matt Chisholm talk about your product. The guy is world class. I'm going to get a bit into the Chisholmisms a bit early here because we have to talk about, everyone was hashtagging Chisholmism this week because it was the best line ever. He said you'd have Matt Chisholm can do it better than me. I'm going to do it well. Omega 3 up the wazoo. That is an incredible combination of words together. This is why sponsors buy into Survivor New Zealand, to have incredible product placement like that. I loved it so much, even though I hate tuna. Really didn't like that reward at all.
Well, I reckon that John West would have just been like, yep, there goes my sales for this week.
Do you think so? I feel like they might have done well for it. I was like, this is terrible. But then I had a few different friends text me saying how much they wanted tuna. And I was like, what is wrong with you? That looks so gross.
I personally think that it's just a funny episode to fact that they put, you know, just one like type of protein instead of, like, I reckon they should have just like a meat or some sort of like red meat, chicken and tuna, with tuna like being the predominant, obviously, for the product. But I don't know. Thought, let's just stick to the tuna instead.
Yeah, I also loved how they had Tessa talking about how she always eats salmon on toast before the reward, and then you go back and you're like, there's some product placement before we even know what we're being sold to about it. That's some good marketing. That is some impressive marketing from Survivor New Zealand.
I actually wonder, was that the day of or the day prior, or was that the... But no, honestly, there's so many times where... you know, contestant literally talk about food on a daily basis that you could probably be you would have said at least some sort of meat at like one of the days, and they would have just used that, kept it, and like, okay, let's use it on the night that it's important.
What was the worst reward that you ever had?
The worst reward? Oh, I didn't really go to much reward except for the one in the waterfall. Oh, okay, that's the best and the worst, right? I love going to the ice cream parlor. We went to this thing where there was heaps of ice cream and there was heaps of toppings, but the sucky part was there was no sorbet alternative.
And not cool.
And because at the end of the day, like, I have too much dairy. I've kind of self-diagnosed myself as lactose intolerant. But I was thinking to myself, I'm like, if I just have all this ice cream, at least I'm going to have some sort of food in my stomach. So I just went and it went in and then it went out.
Did you regret it though? No regrets.
And Annalise would be like, Jericho, you need to listen to your body. And I was like, yeah, it's hungry. So just best and worst.
Yeah, I feel like, okay, if you're lactose intolerant, they should be providing something else with the reward. Like, they should be like other dietary options for people who can't eat that. Seems unfair.
Yeah, well, I know that Peter was I think he couldn't eat nuts or something like that. And I was thinking, damn, like, you know, somebody brings nuts for their, like, little snacks if they want something, that would have been a total, mishap for him. And then they would have been like, oh, shoot, he's gone, medics. P.S., with medics this season, how many times has Matt said medic in every challenge?
Yeah,
it's too much, and so many challenges go wrong. Like, it's almost like, man, they need to put up, I know, I get it that they don't have much with the budget and everything, but some of the things, like, you know, Tessa falling under that pole, and I was like, damn, like, they need to sort that out.
Yeah, but I also feel like it's the charm of Survivor New Zealand. It's like, that's what Survivor New Zealand does. They give you too much tuna. They call the medic all the time. The challenges break. Like, I love this season, and I feel like it's all part of what makes it so great.
One thing somebody pointed out not so long ago is that Survivor New Zealand gives off almost like a one of the original American Survivors vibe, you know, like it's very Palau or very Survivor Amazon, you know what I mean? And the way they edit it is kind of like they definitely make sure they highlight the food. They highlight the starvation, especially in the beginning of the season, and just the way that they edit things, it's quite OG, don't you think?
Yeah, I definitely do, and that's why I love this episode in particular, because it reminded me of some old or some middle school seasons where, you know, it's a bit slower, you know, it's really immersive, but then that payoff is big. You know, we get 65 minutes of these characters every, all these characters besides Tara every week. We get to really know them. And so when it builds up to a huge blindside like this, like it's massive because you don't necessarily expect it every week. And but every week has, I think, been really good. But when it comes to a great moment like this, it's just built up to the fact that it's really amazing. And I think the fact that they have that extra time and they can be a bit, you know, they can give more time to things like we get the braiding scene, for example, which you would never have time for in US Survivor, but I thought was amazing. And I literally have Brad's face in pain in my head right now. It was so funny. So I love that we've had some of that extra time. And while it might have been slower in part, certainly than something like a Survivor South Africa that we're seeing or Survivor US, which tends to feel really rushed at the moment, it's got that old school vibe and the blind sides are just even juicier. And it was so good in this episode.
And I really have praised the season with the fact that they don't use the character's occupation and just talk about that for a long time. They just kind of just deal with, okay, let's get with the gameplay. And I feel like, you know, I really don't know any of the characters, you know, backstory and, except for Dave and Matt's, you know, friendship, but apart from them, I don't know what they do for a living as a job. And yeah, that's good. I like
it. I would probably like more personal content. I really feel like I know these characters, but I feel like I know their personalities, but more in the context of the game without knowing so much of their backstory.
And but you know what? So like, this is just probably me, but I actually like that. I actually like that I've gotten to know their personalities through the game rather than their occupation and this is thing, because sometimes I feel like I connect way more to them than the edit trying to portray somebody purely by their job. And I think, you know, like you go into this game where it's 18 strangers and whatever their background is, at the end of the day, their personality shines through just being on the island with these people and how they talk to each other, how they connect with one another. And I think that's really, like, I think it's like a beautiful thing that Survivor does to people.
Yeah, it's true. It's like US Survivor sometimes will be like, they'll give you something big about that person's backstory, whether it's a profession or a relationship they have on the outside, or even if it's like a sick relative or something like that. And it feels like you know a lot about that person because you know this massive chunk of their life, but it's almost quite shallow in that defines the entire character and you don't tend to know a lot more about them in some cases. Where in this case, we discover them in the game, like as they're playing it. And it's not boiled down to one big thing or anything like that. It just is them, as you said, like how they interact with others, how they react to things. And I think it is actually a very real way of getting to know these characters without knowing so much about them on the outside. Like, we none of us really know what Adam does. I don't know what, it's like a gutter specialist. I don't know what that is, but I feel like I know Adam, you know? And I feel like I know pretty much, again, all these characters. I hate to keep throwing shade at Tara, like, but what can I do? But besides that, I really do feel like I have a sense of these characters without knowing so much about Dave's backstory other than the fact that he's friends with Matt. I feel like I know Dave as a person. Maybe that's wrong, 65 minutes of TV, but I do feel like I have a sense of him.
That's right, yeah. That's it.
It's been good, but I want to also talk about something that wasn't in this episode, which was that we didn't get the outpost. And I do worry that this is it for the outpost because I think they could have made it work post-merge in some sort of way. Did you enjoy the outpost while it was on the show?
Oh, wow. I've forgotten completely about that. The outpost I thought was going to throw a bit of dynamics like they did with the Ghost Island, you know, and I thought they were going to still keep carrying on with it in post-merge. But I thought that there was some parts that I thought was quite unique to it in the sense that there was two people that they could talk to each other and they can almost have like their own space bubble where it's not going to that no one's there to hear. It's a private little conversation. And what I loved about the outpost was when JT had thrown in some blackmail. And I was just like, that's so interesting that someone can do that. Like, and I really thought that Dave could have done that with, say, Lisa, when Lisa was like, oh, I'm not going to read it out because I don't want you to know the advantage.
Yeah.
But I could have seen an opportunity where Dave was like, if you don't tell me, then I'll just tell everybody that this is what it is.
Yeah, obviously a lot of it was two people going from different tribes. But I do feel like they could have revolutionized it in some way to work after the merge. I don't really know how, and I don't know how they're going to fill that extra time that they were using for the outpost with the 65 minutes. Obviously, this episode was so incredible, so it wasn't really lacking in this episode, and all the time that would have been devoted to the outpost, we got them talking about tuna. But besides that, I don't know what they're going to spend the time on, so I do kind of hope maybe in some way it'll come back. I don't know how they'll do it, though.
Yeah. But, yeah, no, that's actually interesting that you point that out, because I think it would create a dynamic within the dynamic that's already happening now.
Yeah.
You know, and it'll start getting people to start doubting where their motives are and the relationship they have and whether someone's got another advantage, you know, like with Adam even considering the idea that there might be another advantage in the reward challenge. It gets people their mind. I think so, yeah.
Yeah. I also want to touch a little bit on the immunity challenge, which I spoke a bit about before, but did you like this challenge? I really loved the setup in the middle of the forest. That was really beautiful, I thought.
Oh, same. I agree. Like, a lot of the challenge has been out in the open. I think this, they just added a bit more color to it, and I think, yeah, it was nice. Actually, like, I like to see greenery for once instead of, like, some orange dirt and like that they've just cleared out.
Yeah, and one of the things I was thinking with this challenge, and it's a lot to expect, but when it gets down to Matt and Eve, which I loved, Matt's like, I'm going to go 1 minute longer than Eve. The rivalry was real. They'd been there for well over 2 hours. I did think, I'm like, Matt should throw this right now. Like, the best case scenario for Matt is for Eve to win and Dave to be safe with his idol and for him to be able to use those Chani votes to go for a Kung Kao or Renee and to keep those votes. So I know that's a lot to expect, and he clearly didn't throw it, but I was like, that would have probably been, you know, Eve winning was probably better for him than Matt actually winning. So it actually worked out better for him that he lost.
For sure. I think, and that's right. He would have started seeing, oh, once she won, like, oh, actually it works out way better. But I think when you're in the game, and especially doing the challenge, just having the security around your neck just makes you feel like you're invincible in the sense that you can throw any shade at anyone and no one can do anything about it. And you feel like, not that I like won any challenges when there was heaps of people, but when it came to an immunity challenge, anyone who almost had the necklace around their neck could almost say whatever they want and talk to anyone and almost like throw out our plan, knowing that no one can get them or no one could touch them. And almost like, oh, and people naturally just vibe off the person who has the necklace and saying, oh, what do you think the plan is to do? And the guy with the necklace would just be like, oh, I reckon this would happen, or we should do this.
Yeah.
So I think in his head, he was thinking, I really want to do this. If I have the necklace on me, I can really push for it and not feel like I've got anything in like my target. So, yeah.
Yeah, I totally see that side as well. That's why I'm saying it's a lot to expect. I do think that in the end, Eve having the necklace ended up being better for him, but I totally see when you've been up there for 2 hours and 15 minutes and you're so close to having that security where you could make a move, I see that it would be really, really hard to drop out at that point. So I can't give him too much shade for that.
And that's what makes you think, what a great player, because he reassessed his circumstances and he said, actually, this is way better. And I think that's what's giving Matt the upper hand when it comes to playing this game, because he's really seeing from the outside perspective that things are changing really quickly in the merge, and seeing that all right, things might not go to the plan that I wanted, but all right, let's see how I can leverage my game. And at the end, the one thing that I really, really liked about what he said at Tribal Council was, he's like, I'm not here to play anyone's game. I'm here to play my game, whether it's not going to turn out in the end, but the way it might not turn out, but I'm playing for my game and I don't care if someone gets upset or whatever. So I was like, whoa, that's so cool to see Matt now really go from second gear to third gear. I really didn't think Matt was someone that was, when I looked at Matt and Dave, I thought Dave was the architect of almost everything. And now I'm going, no, actually, Matt's really playing this game. He's grown on me a lot. So,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, I said when I say that Brad sees black and white, I see Matt as a player who really does see the gray. And what else can I do? And it's like, what multidimensional move can I make where I change things around and don't just stick with the status quo. So that's what I love from him. And the fact that he has the relationships to do that, and obviously like the strategic acumen to do that, speaks so well of his game. Incredible move by him. Let's move from talking about one legend in Matt to another legend in Matt Chisholm with this week's Chismisms. What a segue. I alluded a few minutes ago to the Omega 3 up the wazoo. I think that's the best Chismism we've ever had. Just incredible. I can't say enough about this sentence. Just brilliant from Matt Chisholm.
Matt Chisholm is definitely creating his own legacy. And I think that he is. I reckon the guy has his own little taste and unique, and he's not trying to play, you know, Jeff, or he's not trying to play, you know, Arashayan host, you know, he's being himself. And I think that's what Survivor New Zealand is doing really well. And I think they've got their own like little, twang going on. And I think it appeals to a lot of the international fans out there, and I like it, and I need to stick with it. And I think all they need to really do now is, what's doing really great is this gameplay. And I really hope that they don't revert back to, cheesy, good, you know, just, they just want appearance, you know, and that's about it. And I think that, like right now, Survivors New Zealand is doing well. And I think this is a great ingredient for doing.
Yes. Okay. A few of the things that I love from Matt Chisholm in this episode, besides Omega 3 up the wazoo, which I think I've said now like 5 times on this podcast, and it's still not enough. I loved him in the reward challenge, how he was like up top, like a tennis umpire, like just like in the bird's eye view of it. I'm like, this is his natural place. He should always be just like above the contestants, and then maybe they'd start giving him some respect. Like a tribal council, he should be on a tennis umpire chair. I feel like that would be best.
I actually don't know how tall the guy is, actually.
Yeah.
As I said, he's funny.
The jury being next to him at Tribal Council is so funny. I can't wait till more people are there just staring at the other contestants. Another thing that we just talked about last week was that they got rid of Old Mate Idol and they introduced the individual immunity, but they didn't give it a name. This time he described it as this little beauty. Is that its name or was he describing it? Because like little beauty, Old Mate Idol, little beauty idol. Is that the new name? I feel like that should be the name.
Yeah, we need to start calling it #littlebeauty.
#littlebeauty. I think that should be the name of it. You know, honestly, last week I asked for some people to send in suggestions for what the idol should be called, and I didn't get any, so that hurts. But it's hard to come up with things as well as Matt Chisholm, so I get it. It's a tough task.
Well, I don't know how much of it is going through his head, but at the same time, I'm thinking, I reckon he just plays along and just says whatever he is thinking in his head. Honestly, especially Thailand being like so hot out there, he would have just been delusional, started saying random things. This little beauty.
That does explain a lot about the Chismisms, I think. All right, let's move on to the Chizzy, we're going to give 1 point to third best player, 2 points to the second best player, 3 points to the best player. This has become a bit contentious online. JT thinks we should be cutting down the points, but we're not doing that this week because I have 6 points to give. I'm going to give 1 point to Eve, which is, I think, a bit random in that she didn't get any confessionals. But you know what? She was so good in that challenge, and some challenge wins just are vital. And she might have saved herself by winning this challenge, and she probably changed the whole game, and that they needed to make a big move. You know, the way that Lisa changed the whole game by winning a challenge and winning an advantage in the vote steal, and that changes all the numbers in the game. Eve did that by winning this challenge, I think. So just the way that she was there for well over 2 hours, she backed herself, she did amazing, she saved herself, changed the game. I'm giving her a point for that. Second place, I'm giving to Dave. 2 points. You know, he wouldn't go down without a fight. He told Matt about the idol at the right time, I thought, and they used that well, and he had the trust in him. And then again, for him to have the trust and the security to not play the idol when it's pretty dicey, I think that takes some actual courage. So I'm impressed with that, and I think it's worth 2 points. But 3 points, and I'd give him more points if I could. Easily the best player of the episode for me was Matt, who did just such an incredible job in this episode. He was the undisputed architect of this move, the biggest move in the game so far as well. He had the relationships on Chani and on Kung Kao to put it together. He had the opportunity to strike first as well. He blindsided someone with an idol. Incredible job there. He's hiding his relationship with Dave really well. He helped him retain his idol. So I don't really think that there's enough good things I can say about what Matt did in this episode. Yes, I'm scared for him next week. Yes, you know, bigger fish might start eating him, and that's the way that the season's gone down. But I think after overhearing that conversation with Brad, he doesn't really have a choice, and he has to strike first, and he did it. So 3 points to him. I'm so impressed. Jericho, what points are you giving this week?
Oh, wow. No, those ones are really good points. And now I'm just I'm rethinking who I should pick. But I'll definitely
give one. You can pick the same
one...
people if you agree.
Yeah, well, you know what? I'm definitely going to give one point now that you've pointed out Eve, because you're right. Had it been a different result, could have changed the entire game. But I think for this episode, purely for this episode, 1 point to Eve. She saved herself. She is kind of she's in the know without being targeted, but still being able to make sure that this episode went the way it went. And yeah, so 1 point for her.
Mm-hmm.
I'm giving. Can I share that 2 points there between Adam and Lisa? Only purely because I think, you know what? No, actually, I'm going to give the 2 points to Adam.
Okay.
Because I think one thing I like about how Adam's playing is he's still in the mix with everyone. And the fact that there was this almost like there was this one scene where he was in the water, and he was like, oh, I wonder if I can play a shark trying to attack me. And I think that's the greatest analogy for this season. There's so many sharks in the game, and you might even joke around saying, you know, I'm getting eaten by the shark, but it can so easily happen to you, and you don't even know it. You don't know what's lurking in the waters, and it's so murky. And I think Adam is definitely one of those guys who's playing that, and everyone's just watching him joking around, but they don't know that they're going to get eaten by him. So yeah, 2 points to him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the episode was good for him. And the third person who I'm going to give 3 points is definitely Matt. Yeah. Matt, honestly, you couldn't floor this episode.
No.
The way he played, and the fact that he's using all his cards to leverage himself in the game is amazing. I really felt like this episode highlighted how he's really thinking, the dimensions and the way he's going about in so many angles. I think the fact that he's got this kind of relationship with Adam and Lisa, and he can sit them down and be able to openly talk about how important and how significant it is to get rid of someone like Brad for the future of this and the sake of all three of them, and not you know, even Adam was thinking, I could tell Brad, but I'm not going to.
Mm-hmm.
And he did it. And it just goes to show how much and how deep his relationships are with so many people. But no, Matt's definitely pulled it off successfully. And it takes a lot and gutsiness to be able to actually do that move. So, yeah, massive kudos to Matt.
Yeah, incredible. He's this week's Chizzy winner. So well deserved. But I think Adam then moves to the lead with 18 points. And I think that puts, if I'm doing some quick math on my head without the Chizzy sheet in front of me, I'm pretty sure Matt is now on 16 with dearly departed JT. This is going to make JT real sad. Great job to Matt, the Chizzy winner for episode 9. Great move.
Can I add, though, JT, like, I have to do a shout out for this fella, because I think what I really liked about the season is you had someone like JT who, honestly, when I watched him play this game, the season, gave me a bit of like the kind of US Survivor contestants that I love watching. He kind of gave me a bit of a Stephen Fishback kind of like that Johnny Faith like mix vibe where, you know, he was like, I'm going to get that idol and I'm going to do it today or tomorrow. Like, that really gave me those, you know, US Survivor contestants moments where I'm like, damn, he's playing this game and I hope he makes merch.
Yeah.
Just getting his health. Health is your wealth. And I think he knew that. So
very sad. Dumb. But, you know, JT gone but not forgotten. Literally, he keeps fighting with me about the Chizzy point thing. And also, he did send in our first Survivor New Zealand wand off, which he called a Shan off. I don't think I agree to that name. But we're going to play it at the end of the episode, not to spoil. It's from JT and his friend Sam Holden. So stick around to the end of this podcast, and we're going to end the podcast with it. But of course, JT, always in our hearts, will be mentioned on probably every podcast. So gone but not forgotten for sure.
Awesome. That's cool.
All right. So now I have some questions from the listeners for you, Jericho, if you're keen to answer them.
Yeah, go for it.
All right. John Johnson says, who would you give your cookies to on this season?
Oh, man. I would definitely give my cookie to people who I know will be loyal to me. And I think one of them would definitely go to Matt.
Mm-hmm.
One of them will go to Renee. And one of them will go to Brad.
All right.
Only because I think
poor Brad.
poor Brad, no. Matt, Brad, because I think that they're great people that you can have a shield. And Renee, because she is level-headed, and I think I can play with her and then just take her as far as I can until hopefully she goes home too. But no, but also I think those three are also people I could be friends with, like from watching them. It's like, yeah, I think I'd get along with them really well.
Maybe we should be sending some cookies to whoever wins the chizzy, because at the moment we may or may not have a LaBelle's lobster hat, and Liana Barr said she was going to send a watermelon with a baby in it. Should we be sending some cookies as well to the winner?
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah.
All right, I'm gonna hold you to that. I mean, I guess like if we're sending cookies, it should probably come from you as the cookie monster. So I'm gonna need you to mail some cookies to New Zealand in a couple of months, if that's all right.
I go to New Zealand quite often actually, because it's my hometown. So I might even just rock up and say, "Hey, who's around in town?" and send cookies over.
Okay, sounds good. Dave Backer says, please discuss the ability of even Dave to stay in the game despite the odds being stacked against them week after week. And I think this is an interesting question because Chani reminds me in some ways of the Asanga crew who ended up coming into the merge in that minority. And then obviously you win the game and there was like that Asanga strong thing. Did you see any parallels between Chani and your position coming into a merge?
It's funny how much parallel to the season is to Awan And I feel like, you know, when Chani came into the merge with a small number and there's this massive Kung Kao group, I did wonder whether they can pull it off to be able to say, look, Chani's gone through crap. They've gone through hell and back. But actually, from that comes like massive bonds. And it actually, it's for Kung Kao for not to go through that kind of hell. It means that there's so many cracks that's waiting to just, you know, break apart.
Mm-hmm.
And that happened when it came to our season. We knew that Asanga went through this hell, and there was a point where we were dishing out all our laundries in front of the Samatau crew, and it was out there in the open. And so they had thought that, you know, there was no more Asanga, and there was no this Asanga strong, Asanga blood thing. But in fact, actually, it made us stronger, and we used that as leverage to get rid of the Samatau one by one. Obviously, it's, you know, all this dynamic change, but yeah, it's actually what Chani's doing right now. And I think that you look at Dave and Renee and Eve, and I think now they've got some up hand on them, and now all these Kung Kao are going to gun for each other one by one. You probably might see, I wouldn't be surprised if those three get far in the sky.
Yeah, I think that unfortunately it didn't happen last week to save Aaron, and they got that first one out. I think that what was really key for Asanga was that you guys took out Jared first at the merge and you got that first hit, and it really gave you like some leverage to use throughout that early merge phase, where as I still feel like Chani's on the back foot, obviously Renee's not with them. Dave does have his relationship with Matt and the idol, but yeah, I still feel like it's a long way to go for Dave and Eve, where I feel like there was more daylight for Asanga after you took out Jared at Final 12.
Well, if you look at it, you had it gone the other way, then the person that would have left would have been Luke, which is, you know, the equivalent of the Aaron thing. So had Luke that night, then it would have been a whole other dynamics. And I would have reckoned that Tara would have been the one that would have gotten rid of, or that would have joined that pack. And then me, myself and Sarah would have just been like thinking, what the hell just happened? La, 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 la.
So. I don't want to live in the world where Luke goes at the merge. Like, that's a painful alternate reality. That's truly the darkest timeline. So luckily that didn't happen. And now everyone's going to Disneyland together. Like, we're in the good timeline for sure. John Densford says, if you were Matt or Lisa, would you make sure Tessa and Renee know Adam knew about the blind side? Would that help or hurt their game? I think this is really interesting because Adam, even though he's playing both sides and so far doing it well, as I've said, he's in such a dangerous place now where he could be blackmailed and he really has to get like on the front foot with that before people can be like, oh, well, he knew, but he didn't tell Brad to play the idol, so he pretty much betrayed you. How do you think Adam should play it at the beginning of the next episode?
Oh, that's a good question, and it's so tough, eh? Because it worked so well day one of post-merge, where Adam, everyone telling Adam anything was their worst move. You know, Aaron was like, oh, Adam knows about all of us trying to get rid of blah, blah. And he's thinking, yep, Adam's on our side, la, la, la. And then Brad telling Adam this and saying, oh, this is what's happening. And I think Adam had all this information, and as much as of a, you know, you've got idols and all of these advantages, I honestly felt like the most dangerous player at the time was Adam, because information is key, and you can use that to any way you wanted it. You even saw Lisa going up to Adam and saying, what should we do? And he's like, oh, I was thinking what we should do with your two votes. Let's play with it. And it was almost like he was using her advantage. Do you know what I mean? Mm. So, and so the fact that he had all this information is great. But now that we're getting down to the nitty gritty, you can't play that, because now everyone's getting to the point where, well, Adam knows way too much. Or if you tell Adam this, he's going to tell, say, a Tessa or a Matt, and you almost don't know where his loyalties are at. And it's too hard to give, to have an idea of where his head is at, and actually might be a bad idea to tell anything to him anymore. So I actually don't know. It's a good question. I actually don't know. Adam's in a sticky situation. And if I was anybody like Lisa, I don't know whether to tell Adam anything, but just put a smile. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that with Adam, we've talked about how good his social game is with everyone except Dylan, and that remains to be true, but he has the biggest test of his social game next week, coming back and trying to explain to Tessa and Renee what he did and didn't know, you know, how he played that. And, I trust that Adam's social game is good enough that he could pull it off, but he has a tough job ahead of him trying to smooth that over with some of his key allies.
Yeah.
Maggie Gibbons says, the reward this episode was literally my worst nightmare. I couldn't think of anything more excruciating than being stuck on an island with so much tin tuna. Maggie, same. I totally get you. So what is a potential reward which you would see as more of a punishment than a reward? What would they tell you that you'd just be like, leave me out of it. It's fine. It's really fine.
I don't know, actually. It would probably be something I hate, flipping I have no idea.
What's your least favorite food?
Like cheese and crackers. Like,
how can you eat cheese and crackers?
Because it's not that I'll eat it, right? But I'm just not like a cheese and crackers wine kind of person. It just feels like I could eat something more substantial. We even had that, but I was just like, meh. I'd rather have the cake and the brownies and all of that stuff. No, but I'm not really cheese and crackers. Like I just don't do that stuff. I'll eat it. I'll eat it, but cheese and crackers is not my thing.
Well, I mean, also with the lactose intolerance, I guess it's not worth it, like the ice cream, to just like completely ruin your body for it.
That's probably where it's coming from, because I'm thinking, why don't I actually like them? And I was like, maybe that's the cheese.
I think we've worked it out, actually. I think that might be why you don't like the cheese. We've solved the mystery here today. Jonathan Lilia says, should they have gotten rid of Tessa instead of Brad? Tessa seems to be the key person holding a bunch of others together.
No, I don't agree. I think Brad can influence people far more than Tessa can, and that's far more dangerous, because if you have someone like Brad, say for the next round, he's still got one, an idol, and two, he's got other relationships where he can switch around. He can also win challenges, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas Tessa, I feel like if she is out in the loop and she realizes, oh shit, I'm in the wrong side of the vote and I'm in the minority, she'll curl up in a ball and what Adam said on the lines like, when you have people like them, they'll find their next mama and papa. And that they'll do. They'll just cling on to the person who's like, oh, I need some, I need to take refuge. And I think Adam will pick those pieces. And I think that's what's happened.
Yeah. I do think Tessa does have relationships. I think Brad had relationships too, but I think leaving Brad in the game with an idol that he can play next time is just not a good vibe. Like, if you're going to take the shot like you guys did with Henry, make it a massive blindside, take out the person with an idol, and now that minority is completely unprotected. So I think it was completely the right move.
And again, like, there will be repercussions, whether it's going to be a good or like ridiculously bad one. I still think that was a good move, you know, with Matt.
Yeah. Okay, last question. Felipe Chamon says, who is the Jericho on the season and who is their Luke? So I guess who's like the tightest pair in the game that you can see?
Oh, look, I don't necessarily say it's exactly Luke and Jericho, but, because they have, literally, I really believe that they have their own unique thing going on. And I think that's Matt and Dave. And, and you know what, the thing is that even they have far more cars that they're playing with compared to me and Luke. They've got an idol they're dealing with. They got this cool as bond relationship going. And that's why I'm thinking those guys, I wouldn't compare myself to these guys, because these guys are doing amazing in their season. And but yeah, I would say them too. And I honestly think that there's this almost a bit of a Adam and Tessa going on. So I don't know how that's going to work. Whether I'm not sure how power couples go about in this season. But it's changing almost every episode, so I don't know. Actually don't know.
Because you and Luke voted together every time, right? Until he, even when he went home, you didn't vote for him, even though you knew what was happening. And I don't think that exists on the season for everyone who's been together on the same tribes since day one and have voted together every time, now except Tara and Lisa, and we don't know enough about their relationship to talk about how tied to Jua they are. So that's really interesting. Everyone's either been broken apart by tribe swaps or have turned on each other at some point. Even someone like Matt and Dave, who obviously are a tight pair and have a friendship, it's interesting because they've both betrayed each other. So yeah, there's no Luke and Jericho on this season. No one is as good a bromance, as tied a pair as Luke and Jericho, in my humble opinion.
But that's what makes this season even better, because in the terms of not like as us for viewers, the fact that we don't know where everyone's loyalty is at, I'm almost like, you know, of course there's a Matt and Dave relationship, but Matt always said, as well as Dave in their own confessions, like, I'm not going to put my life on the line for him at the end of the day, if it comes to a point where for the expense of my game, you know what I mean? So
yeah.
It was just a matter of time where I feel like one of those guys is going to chop their head off, and it's going to be pretty scary.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that's all the questions that I have for you, Jericho. Where can everyone find you on social media? Where can everyone follow what you're up to as you travel around the world?
Well, you can follow me on Instagram. It's just, you just even write down Jericho Malabunga or Jerry Mowgli, but you'll find me there. It's just literally my life. I'm not fancy schmancy with going like great events or anything like that. I'm just doing my life. But seriously, the last couple of things that I've been doing is just a lot of charity work. And if you guys get around that, that'll be pretty cool.
Amazing. What kind of stuff have you been doing?
Well, obviously the most recent one that I did was Cambodia, and I went there to help out a rural kindergarten school it was built by this awesome guy, and he's a local man called Pui. He's got a company called Pui's Rural School. We went there for 10 days with me and Tara, and but now recently me and Luke have gone and doing this charity work in Perth, and it's for mental illness in the youth from ages 12 to 15, but that's really just a number. It's mental illness in general, and I really am passionate about that, and I think that people need to get around that, because it's especially with so many depressions going around and suicides these days, I think it's awesome that people are aware of it. Yeah.
Incredible. Well, that's awesome that you're doing that. We also need, we need a hashtag for this episode of the podcast if everyone made it this far. I've got a couple of suggestions. Hashtag little beauty, as you said. We've got hashtag up the wazoo, which again, just amazing. For
a match. Those are good ones. Literally, I like those two.
Yeah. Okay, let's do hashtag up the wazoo. I also had hashtag survivor Russian dolls, but no, Matchism deserves to have the hashtag this week with the just incredible sentence again. Omega 3 up the wazoo. I want to work that into my daily life, but I'm not currently sure how I'll do it, but I'm going to find a way to make it work. You guys can find me on Twitter, on Instagram, at Shannon Gaitz, S-H-A-N-N-O-N-G-A-I-T-Z. I did a 2.5 hour deep dive on episodes 5, 6, and 7 of Survivor South Africa with my co-host Mike Bloom. That's already up, and we're going to be doing weekly coverage every week. So if you're not watching this awesome season of Survivor South Africa yet, binge it, catch up with us, follow along every single week. Next week for Survivor New Zealand, I'll be talking to New Zealand's own great Shannon Quinn from New Zealand Survivor Season 1. So that'll be awesome to get her perspective on it. And otherwise, that's all I have, Jericho, unless you have something that you wanted to add or if you have anything else to say about the episode.
No, I'm just excited. I'll be tuning in until the end of the season because it's amazing. And I really hope that I can catch up with all of you contestants if you guys are listening, because I really want to catch up with you guys and see what's in the know, see what didn't get onto the show. Yeah, because I really want to hear all of those stuff.
Yeah, and handle, yeah, deliver those cookies to the contestants. Be good.
Right. Yeah, welcome talking with you, Shannon.
Yeah, thanks so much for coming on, Jericho. It's been so much fun. Thanks to the listeners. If you've gone this far, thank you for listening to us. Thank you to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. And I'm going to leave you with the musical stylings, the first New Zealand wander from JT Muirhead himself and Sam Holden. Everyone, please listen now to Charney Dave.
Charney days, living on an island far away. I'm plotting to vote Erin and Dave. Oh, I believe in Charney days. Suddenly, my social's not what it used to be. Count not sharing idle clues with me, and I'm urinating painfully. What did Lisa win? I don't know, she wouldn't say. I guessed double votes gone. Cheesy points came so easily. Now I feel pain when I try to pee. Oh, I believe in Johnny days. Why did JT go with a tear in his eye? Off drug resistant UTI.
This is King Cobra here with a message to all you future Survivor players. You gotta keep it clean out there, folks. Thanks for your support.